This is Mae Brussel. It's part two of broadcast number 689, February the 18th, 1985. There is a book out called America's Saints, The Rise of Mormon Power by Robert Gottlieb and Peter Wiley, put out by George Putnam's Sons, New York, 1984. And there is one section of the chapter on Ronald Reagan and Paul Lack Salt that I want to share with you, just a little bit of that. You can get this book at your library or buy it. I think maybe Tom Davis has it at Research. And see if Howard Hughes is dead. The myth that Drosnin is trying to carry is this is a man that did all these things that didn't succeed, that his plans encompassed him, and too bad he failed. This is what he wanted to do. And my version of history is that the people that kidnapped him, that didn't let him out, got everything they want, and they'll get more of it tomorrow. This section, The Saints March On in Washington, it says, the Las Vegas Mormon community has been able to exert a degree of political influence well beyond its numbers. Mormons play a significant role in Paul Lack Salt's election and re-election, tying them to Ronald Reagan's closest advisor on Capitol Hill. And also, as I say, Lack Salt is close to Robert Keith Gray. Robert Keith Gray was dating Rosemary Woods at the time of Watergate and was very close to the inner team, always, of the Reagan and the Nixon players. They all were, as you see now, Reagan's whole staff are the Nixon group. He's even taken on Tom Buchanan, the speechwriter. They're all one and the same, and they're pulled by the same puppet master, the White House personnel. It says, with the rise of Ronald Reagan, the Saints' loyalty to the GOP has brought the Mormons to the peak of their influence in Washington. They pulled out a while, for 4 years, while Jimmy Carter was in, and it's the largest concentration of Mormons east of the Mississippi serving in Washington, D.C. right now. In the post-war period, there were three Mormon networks that radiated through Congress and the bureaucracy. The most important was Senator Wallace Bennett. And according to his son, Robert Bennett, he deliberately set out to tie in all the young people that were coming east. And they got help from him and worked with Eisenhower and Senate Leader Everett Dirksen. One of them got an important appointment as head of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, in spite of Jacob Javits' attempts to get a Rockefeller man in the position. The second network was with Ezra Taft Benson in the development of agriculture and ties to agribusiness, and the Saints worked their way through the merit system. And one of the successors of Ezra Taft Benson's work was J. Willard Marriott. He began his business career as owner of Washington Hot Shops and rose to be a major advisor to the church. The third network was the law firm of Wilkinson, Craig, and Barker, and they worked under Justice Felix Frankfurter and became very important in Washington, D.C. The church public relations were handled for a time by the Washington-based Robert Mullen, who Mullen was a non-Mormon, but he was joined by Bennett's son, Robert, who Mullen dealt directly with Prophet David O. McKay. It's interesting that the office, the Mullen associates themselves, weren't Mormons, but Robert Mormon headed the firm, but Bennett's son, Robert Bennett, who managed the Mullen Associates, was a Mormon, and most of the people running the operation there were for and with the Mormon Church. It goes on to say how E. Howard Hunt recruited the young Mormons from the Brigham Young University for spying during the Watergate period. Mormons have overseas experience as missionaries, language skills, and their willingness to respect authority. Therefore, they have careers in the CIA and the FBI. They're also white, and they have nice teeth and non-kinky hair, all the traits that the white Anglo-Saxon group like, the characteristics of obeying and the physical characteristics that I think are very important to the intelligence community when they set about hiring their particular hierarchy. It goes on to Apostle Neil A. Maxwell worked for the CIA. The Mormons are represented disproportionately in the CIA and the FBI because, in quotes, they can be trusted. And there's a lot to be said for trust. One Mormon in the CIA, Assistant General Counsel Michael J. Barrett, says that spying has the blessing of God. They've written a lot in their Mormon books on spying and God's will in doing this. That's part of the church tradition and instruction. In the books that I've read, criticisms of the Mormon church, and I have quite a few of those. Jack Anderson is their best-known Mormon, but under his successor, Ronald Reagan, it says Carter was the kind of person who remembers who his friends are. But under his successor, Ronald Reagan, Utah's Mormon Republicans reestablished their role of being part of the Western-based national coalition that carried him into the White House. The church had disproportionate representation under Ronald Reagan. Under him, the Mormons everywhere in Washington are doing quite well. Richard Werthelin could be found in and out of the Oval Office. Werthelin had the traveling computer with the data banks to instruct him on everything that was said by Mr. Mondale and Geraldine Ferrara, and had an up-to-date question and answer, looking up the data so that Ronald Reagan would be on top of all the issues. That was done by the Mormon computer of Richard Werthelin. Don't forget the Mormon data bank that has the genealogy of everyone on planet Earth going back to the year 600, that's in those rocks and archives that they microfilm every single day, every new birth and every wedding, separating the family the genealogies of families. T.H. Bell, the former U.S. Commissioner of Education, and he was Utah Commissioner of Education, joined the cabinet as Secretary of Education. Richard Richards, for a time, was chairman of the Republican National Committee, another Mormon. Rex E. Lee, the founding dean of the Brigham Young University Law School, was Solicitor General while in Washington, D.C., while Mark Cannon was Administrative Assistant to Chief Justice Warren Burger. Robert Broadbent, as Commissioner of Reclamation, controlled the vast publicly funded water system that keeps the West alive, a member of the Mormon Church. Senator Paula Hawkins from Florida, a well-known Mormon. Congressman Ronald Packard from Southern California, Harry Reid from Nevada, Orrin Hatch and Jake Garn are two well-known Mormons, and Orrin Hatch boasted to the Deseret News that this new Congress, I'll have the greater ability to defeat the ERA than ever before. He's very happy about that. A very devout Mormon and an important one is Mr. Skousen, S-K-O-U-S-E-N, and I want to do a lot more on him and his relationship to power in data banks in Washington, D.C. and Utah. He started as an FBI, just like James McCord or E. Howard Hunt, and he worked under J. Edgar Hoover, assistant under J. Edgar Hoover, and head of the special projects in the 40s to identify subversives in the 1940s as against Nazis in this country. And then he formed his own organization for a short while. He was chief of police in Utah and was out because of some scandals, and formed a group called the Free Men Institute. And the purpose is to restore the Constitution. You may have heard about that work. And he's considered one of the most influential people in Utah and in Washington. Skousen serves as the local contact for national conservative organizations such as the National Conservative Political Action Committee, PAC, the Committee for Survival of a Free Congress, has ties to the Moral Majority. Skousen also has ties to Patrick Frawley, the Vatican connections in California. That Frawley was the man who conceived the idea of introducing various people to Ronald Reagan and making Reagan the future president of the United States, governor, and then president. Skousen works with them and has the Freeman Institute. So just summing up the theme of that book, I think you get the idea that the goals of the Howard Hughes organization, or the people that Howard Hughes had, those people are not crying because they lost their control of the presidency. It has been a continuous line that has worked well, and they are in power today, and therefore don't feel that Howard's wishes were not fulfilled. Last week I talked about AmeriCares Foundation, and I ran out of time and want to do more on that. The Knights of Malta, the humanitarian organization that is controlled by members of our intelligence community, the CIA, and Prescott Bush, the brother of the Vice President, J. Peter Grace, and the drug companies, and how they're sending almost $1 million a month down to Central America to various countries in order to eventually maintain and control every area of Central America, and of course South America is pretty much in the hands of these people at the present time. And the drug companies contribute to this, what they call humanitarian need, but the medical relief has been linked to the intelligence community, to the CIA and the Defense Department. So who's kidding who? Congress doesn't have to vote against money for the Contras, giving it to the Contras. They hand it to them themselves and say they're a private organization. Apropos of that, last week there was an article in the Monterey Herald just this morning, February 25th, showing this pathetic child, a 7-year-old child soldier, watched his mother being killed. And this is about orphanages. And the article I talked about last week mentioned the orphanages that they take care of, and that is a big part of the medical relief. And it tells about 221 homeless boys and girls who are taken care of in an orphanage by Reverend Ken Myers. He's a member of the Catholic Church who goes through war-torn areas and picks up children whose mothers and fathers have been yanked from them by the death squads. And it says children are from the war-torn rural area in a dirty war involving soldiers, leftist guerrillas, and clandestine death squads. And they've seen the parents dragged from their homes, never to be seen again, and they talk about their parents being killed. Now, the orphanage takes these children, and the money, a lot of it, it says, comes from grants from West Germany and the United States. So we supply these weapons, $1 million a month, and approve of hundreds of millions of dollars into Honduras, Nicaragua, for the Contras, El Salvador, for the right wing, the death squads, to kill the peasants. And we're funding this area with the Defense Department, with the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and allowing these death squads to happen. And then through the Humana organization or Humane group or the kindness of the church, they take these pitiful orphans, one of them is school home, 220. And what a contradiction. It's as big a contradiction as the used one that I was talking about, the fear of germs and living in germs. We allow these weapons to go down, and then we build these orphanages and raise the orphans as Catholic, little good Catholics, under the church. And weren't we good to you when the bad people knocked you out? We're humanitarian. So you wipe out a few peasants, and you control the minds of the youth and construct their thinking because you're their savior, never saying that the people at the top condone the shootings and have allowed the parents to be taken away. That's something these people have to live with and never will understand. So it's a terrible tragedy to have to look into the horrors going on down in Central America and not face up to who is doing it. The very person, this J. Peter Grace, who is the head of this Knights of Malta in the United States and head of funding the relief down there through the drug companies and so forth, in charge of our own financial reduction of benefits and federal budget for the middle class and the poor. J. Peter Grace was mentioned in a newspaper article I might have shared with you going back to 1981, where the Jewish organization, the Yeshiva University, wanted to honor J. Peter Grace, and people objected. He was going to get an honor at the dinner there, and the people who got information, you know, to buy tickets and so forth, pointed out that he was a partner of Otto Ambrose, a director of IG Farben, the chemical company during the war that exterminated so many people into the ovens. And the $150 dinner was put off or postponed because W.R. Grace and company and their head, J. Peter Grace, were going to be awarded for Distinguished Service Award for standing leadership in civic and humanitarian endeavors. They give themselves accolades for being humanitarians, and the newspaper stories say humanitarians. And again, you have to analyze what is going on. The article says there is documentation that Grace personally and corporately utilized and interceded in behalf of convicted war criminal Ambrose, who's been a highly paid consultant for W.R. Grace, January the 13th, 1980, ABC TV Network. Oh, it's, pardon me, TV Network on ABC. I was just saying they don't have anything of this kind, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they have some stories. It had a program called Escape from Justice, Nazi War Criminal in America. Ambrose was helped to enter the United States by J. Peter Grace of W.R. Grace and Company. The officials helped him. And they went on, Ambrose was a chemist and director of I.G. Farben, the chemical company, and supplied gasoline and rubber for Adolf Hitler, and also ran the Buna plant with Auschwitz and the slave labor. And Ambrose was convicted of slavery and mass murder and sentenced to 8 years at Nuremberg prison. He only served three. That's when John J. McCloy let him out, and he was part of Project Paperclip that brought the Nazis to this country. And he's worked closely with J. Peter Grace, and Ambrose have exchanged information. Still runs a chemical company, Mr. Grace, among other things, and entertains Ambrose in a financial bonding of the two of them that was beneficial to both of them. So the Yeshiva University decided that they were a center of learning and scholarship, a living symbol of intellectual, scientific, and artistic gifts that the Jewish people have brought to all peoples. This is what Yeshiva is supposed to be. And then they were going to give the award to Mr. Grace as a humanitarian. So these articles about medical aid down to Central America and humanitarian is a cover again for killing and more killing. And unfortunately, there's no way to stop these articles. They keep going on, but we can call attention to them at least and get a little more informed about the real nature of humanitarianism. Now, there's been a lot in the news about Joseph Mengele. You've seen it. The Senator D'Amato wants to find him. William French Smith, before he left, up to the day left, will find Mengele's. And Mengele's is in the news very much these days and is being not smoked out, but making the news stories. And almost a year ago, I was saying, look for the Mengele story to bubble. If you have my past broadcasts, one is 608. August the 1st, 1983, it has a chronology of John DeLorean's arrest, Klaus Barbie's arrest, DeLorean arrested November 1982. This is very important. Klaus Barbie arrested in January of 83. That's 2 months later. Joseph Mengele's attorney was meeting, I said, in November 1982 in Zurich, Switzerland, November 13th to 15th, just before DeLorean was arrested, in Zurich, Switzerland, where allegedly $20 million was put into the bank account of Joseph Mengele. Now, that information that I had on the air, I've updated for you from time to time and linked these people together. And DeLorean, of course, got off on the drug dealing charge. Klaus Barbie has not gone to trial, and now they're looking for Mengele. In addition to broadcast number 608, that was August the 1st, 1983, I updated August 27th, 1984, broadcast 664. Those are two tapes you might want to order for your collection on John DeLorean, Klaus Barbie, and Joseph Mengele, because they may be very valuable in terms of history of America and expose, just as my early Watergate stories were, and might explain a little bit to you about the relationship of these men. And my allegations were given to Mr. Oglestone of the FBI in Detroit, and on broadcast number 664, I have the date, and to a man named Murray Sams, an attorney in Miami, in August 29, 1983, of the links of Klaus Barbie and Martin Bormann and Joseph Mengele and cocaine traffic to John DeLorean. Now, this past week, there was a newspaper article, maybe you saw it, Joseph Mengele linked to narcotics traffic. Did you see that one in the paper? That is pertinent to what I was saying before. All of a sudden, they not only know where he is, they've known that for a long time, but they have the narcotic connections of Joseph Mengele to, it has to be the high Nazis and the dope dealers down in South America. If they know that much, then they know more about Joseph Mengele. This was in the San Jose Mercury. A senator says Mengele linked to drug trade. This is Mr. Senator D'Amato, Alphonse D'Amato in New York, says that the Nazi war criminal is still at large. He might have financed his life and travels as a fugitive in South America by trafficking heavily in cocaine. To traffic heavily in cocaine is the Klaus Barbie connections in Bolivia and Martin Bormann. Cables and other documents indicate that Mengele had a network available to him raising large sums of money, and that high officials in South America gave him protection. Now, that is exactly what I was trying to say a year ago. And all of a sudden, in the story, looking for Mengele, this little bit comes out. Now, when they were referring to Joseph Mengele on television, David Brinkley, this is again an ABC show on February the 17th, several weeks ago. Representative Holzman was there, and Mr. D'Amato, and Rabbi Heyer of the Wiesenthal Institute, and Mr. Ryan from the State Department, who was involved with some searching for Nazis, but covers up more than he ever uncovers. When Ryan first talked about getting Klaus Barbie when he was brought in, he said that Barbie never dealt in cocaine, and that was a lie. He was on this program. D'Amato said Mengele left Paraguay in the 60s and was in Portugal. Mengele has been in and out of Paraguay and other countries constantly, even as of yesterday, possibly. But Mengele is very much a part of the Paraguay military institution and the drug connections, and he can travel wherever he wants. Mr. Heyer said on the television that is part of the program, he was asked, is Martin Bormann dead? And Heyer said, absolutely, Bormann is dead. That's another lie. Barbie did deal in cocaine. Mengele didn't leave in the 60s. He's still around, and Bormann is alive. And then they made a comment, no member of the SS should work for the United States. Well, a lot of them do, and a lot of them did. And then Mr. Ryan said, Mengele was never in the United States, and that's another lie. You say, why would the Hughes organization, whoever they are, buy ABC? Well, run off the lies, and you'll know why, because they may tell one truth about Otto Ambrose, but they give you more lies. There are a lot of references to Bormann being alive. I don't have time on this broadcast to do them with you, because I want to just quickly, in the last few minutes, go over the Rabbi Heyer is from the Wiesenthal Institute in raising $30 million as a monument to the Holocaust. And Simon Wiesenthal says Martin Bormann is dead. Heyer says he's dead. They never can find Mengele, and they lie about a lot of other things, too. I hate to tell you or break your illusions, but they do tell lies. And the American Jewish community particularly, I don't know about the international community, have been concerned that these people represent their finding the Nazis. Now, this past week, I was doing some work on the escape route of Bormann and Rudell and Scorzeny bringing their money and links to the Nazis up in Idaho and Oregon and Washington. And I got out a book, The UFO Nazi Secret Weapons, by Madden Friedrich, because of the route of the money again and the Nazi gold. I wanted to check it out. And in that book, on page 83, it refers to a book called The Avengers, written by Bar Zohar, about post-war tactics of the Germans. And I went to the library. It's a very hard book to find. I went to the Pacific Grove Library here, a local one, and was able to find the book. Samizdat publisher, incidentally, that puts out this book is the Nazi organization. Mr. Samizdat is under trial now and charges that he lies about history because he says there was no Holocaust. He gets his books out from Toronto, Canada. But his books are very good information if you're a Nazi or a right-winger. And I don't mind reading that because I want to know what they know, and it's a method of communication between each other. So I went to our local library and got the book, The Avengers, translated from the French. It was written by a French author in 1967, published by Hawthorne Books. The man who wrote this, Michael Bar Zohar, also wrote The Hunt for German Scientists. And in this book, it tells about the true hunters for the Nazis, and it talks about Simon Wiesenthal. And it says that Wiesenthal was one of the few survivors of the Malthusian extermination camp that was in Poland, M-A-U-T-H-A-U-S-E-N, extermination camp. When he was freed, he weighed no more than 100 pounds. Well, that's about 10 more than Vance Cooper did when he played the Howard Hughes part. He's 6 feet tall. He soon became an agent for the American OSS. And shortly after the war, he was beginning to track down Nazi war criminals. Now, remember that the Nazi war criminals were being hired like they were going out of style by the American government. And this is the first time I have ever seen that Simon Wiesenthal was hired by the OSS. That's William Donovan and William Stevenson. There's a lot of Jews in the OSS, I guess. One was future Justice Goldberg. And if you read The Pledge Betrayed, it tells how a man escaped from a concentration camp to go to London to tell Goldberg about the extermination camps, and Goldberg turned him away, and he commits suicide that next day. He was so rejected by that Jew, Goldberg, who wouldn't listen to the extermination. Now, I have an article here. I won't have time to read the whole thing to you, but maybe there are answers to this Wiesenthal Center and Rabbi Heyer and the lies that they've been telling these Jews and Gentiles for years. It's a press conference in the Soviet Union put out by the Anti-Zionist Committee, published in the New Times in October of 1984. A man named David Dragunsky is talking, and he says, talking about the end of World War II, he says, all honest-minded people on Earth are preparing to meet a great date, the 40th anniversary of the victory over Hitler fascism. And he tells that you have to remember these things to have an accurate analysis of the essence of fascism and the root causes of aggression. Now, I won't have time to go over this whole thing for you, but he says, paradoxically, the victory over fascist Germany is not officially marked in Israel. They don't allow the celebration over fascism. And this is the story of a few anti-fascist fighters in Israel who have their own little celebration on the anniversary of opening up the camps. The Soviet Union reminds them of how they freed these Jews from the concentration camps and how they are anti-fascist fighters. And it goes into the role, which is consistent with four or five books I've purchased in the last 2 years. He said, contrary to historical truth and Zionist propaganda, they try to narrow down the problem of the Nazi crimes against humanity as being strictly anti-Semitism, that they didn't like Jews, rather than they want to control the world. And it says the ideologists of Zionism have another reason for trying to conceal the actual events connected with progressive forces who fight Nazism. Among the gloomier pages of history of World War II are the telling of the role of men played as traitors who offered their services to the fascist hangmen. They established the Zionist cooperation with the Nazis. This is a long article that I will outline and share you the essence. It says the rulers of Nazi Germany gave the Zionists every encouragement for the colonization that was to become Israel. In 1934, Baron Leopold von Mildenstein, chief of the SS Jewish Department, was a guest of Palestine's Zionist organizations. In September and October of 1934, Der Angriff, D-E-R-A-N-G-R-I-F-F, the leading Nazi propaganda publication, edited by Goebbels himself, carried 12 articles by Mildenstein praising the Zionist colonization of Palestine that would become Israel. The Hohenstein passenger liner, purchased by the Zionist Palestine Shipping Company, ran a captain on the ship who had the Star of David with Hebrew characters that he wore, and the ship was named Tel Aviv. And it was complete with a kosher kitchen and flew a huge swastika flag. The ship's captain, Tilman Leiding, was a veteran Nazi. This article is about the use of the Nazis with Adolf Hitler and Mussolini. As I say, we've mentioned this at different times. I've shared this with you. This is a long story of the relationship of the Zionist organization to Hitler and Mussolini, to Goebbels and Goering, and more is coming out of every day. I know that when I've tried to reach what you call top Jews, Jewish leaders, on the links of the Kennedy assassination to Nazis, they lock the doors, they slam the doors, they won't. If I write to Israel, I can't find information on Fritz Kramer. They're supposed to have a record of every person in the Gestapo or Nazi war criminal, and he was a criminal. Nothing made sense about the Jewish community's relationship to Nazism until I began to take individuals separately and their relationship to agencies of our government. Simon Wiesenthal of the OSS makes a lot of sense. Now, next week, I don't have time for it. I'm going into some more on John DeLorean and the connections to Joseph Mengele and to Klaus Barbie, to show you how I've been trying to smoke this out for several years. Also, there is a long article in the Los Angeles Times on Judge Robert M. Takasugi and his financial maneuvers. Takasugi was the judge that cleared John DeLorean sitting in that hotel room with the cocaine. I did a broadcast on him, number 663, on Judge Takasugi. Now it turns out that he was under federal, or not federal, state investigation, and the U.S. District Judge was getting word that he would have to stand trial himself while the John DeLorean drug traffic trial was going on. And I'll talk about the judge, what he did, sending Larry Flynt to the mental hospital and the prisons of the United States, and the judge working with Gordon Novell, all going back again, Novell interfering with the DeLorean trial, going back to the John Kennedy assassination. These stories go back to the Howard Hughes or back to the John Kennedy. They all have roots in the agents. Novell worked with Permandex, and he works with the Judge Takasugi. So next week, I'll go back into the smoking out of Mengele now, his drug traffic, and his relationship to these people that I was talking about over a year ago. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week. Save your articles and send clippings, as many as you can that you think I can use. And you students up in Santa Cruz, get to work, and let's fight fascism. Don't kill yourself for it. Bye-bye.